Welcome to Combo Smite, the War Machine and Horde's Battle Report podcast brought to you by an Imperial Lackey, an overpowered Swan, and an angry Elf. This week's Combo Smite brought to you by the number 15, the threat range of the House Guard Halberdiers, with the House Guard Thane and Quicken, and the letters FU. Hi, and welcome to Combo Smite. Now being recorded with Audacity, so all sorts of horrible things are going to happen for this podcast, and I apologize to everyone in advance. My name is Mark, I'm your host, and I play Signar and Menoth.
I am Nick, and I play Retribution and Dwarves.
Unfortunately, we don't have Aaron today. Aaron is off in Toronto watching a, air quote, sporting event, air quote. I honestly don't know what kind of
sporting... I don't buy it for a second.
Yeah, just sporting events? Like, seriously, who watches those things? And what kind of sports teams does Toronto have anyways? That has, like...
Can't think of any personally.
Yeah, exactly. My thoughts precisely. And why he would ever prioritize such events over talking about War Machine, completely foreign. But, you know, what can you do? For the podcast this week, Nick and I decided we would try something new and exciting. Rather than playing each other or someone from our extremely local meta, we decided to go to a local friendly gaming store.
For the record, I think that we don't even deserve to call it a meta. It's our buddy's house.
Yes. So,
I think we're below the threshold in which it gets called a meta.
It could be. It was only six of us. But I should say that the buddy's house that we go to, Adams, he considers himself president of our gaming club. So, you know, there is that. Anyways, so we decided we would go out into the vast wilderness of an FLGS, a friendly local gaming store, and play some random people. The motivation for this decision was that there's a tournament coming up that both Nick and I, and hopefully Aaron, are going to be competing in, which has some steamroller rules that we've never used before, specifically 7-minute time turns. And, you know, we figured it would be kind of nice to get some experience against some people we might actually be playing. So we went off, and as a result, Nick played a game, and I played a game against two random people, and we're going to do a relatively quick report on how our battles went, and then we're going to talk a little bit about how we performed in this brave new foreign meta of people we've never played yet. But before we get to that, news and announcements. Nick, do you have anything you want to talk about this week?
No, actually, nothing has really happened this week for my stuff.
Excellent. I want to talk about Striker 3. Because they just released...
That's a surprise.
Yeah, what a stunning turn of events. Okay, they just released a picture of the finished model. I don't know if it's a prototype model or just one of the first production line models. Of the Striker 3 Cavalry Warcaster. I'm not crazy about it. I think it looks good. The wall is kind of interesting that Striker is bursting through with his electronic-powered horse. The armor plate on the side of the horse looks a little bit cumbersome. It's a big square. And the flag is just ridiculous, let's be honest. The Harbinger has a flag almost that size, and it is a pain in the ass to have on her model. I cannot imagine it will be any better on Striker 3.
The only thing I can say about the model, I mean, like, it looks nice. I mean, I don't think it's a crappy model or anything. I agree with all the things you said. The wall is silly, the armor thing looks silly, the flag is silly. The great thing about this is that all these things are very easily modifiable by even people with your modicum of talent.
Exactly, and that was exactly what I was going to say, is that flag is going to look awful on Striker, but it is going to look fantastic as a medium-based flag marker, which is exactly what I'm going to do with it. It is going to get snipped off, on a base.
Store. Yeah, come to Papa.
Exactly. So it is going to be used. And you know what? I even have an extra Harbinger flag, so I'm going to have two flags that are actually flags, which I think will just look fantastic.
I actually have the flag from Ashlyn that I cut off her as well. I can make some more flags with those two.
There we go. Three flag markers. It was like it was intended or something. Wouldn't that be awesome if that's actually what Privateer Press was thinking? They're like, no, we don't want these actually to be on the model. Just snip them off and make bases out of them. You're set. Anyway, so the Striker 3 model looks incredible. I can't wait to see how it looks painted up. A few minor gripes, as I mentioned, but I think those are relatively easily fixable. And this is making me one step closer to my dream of a 100% cavalry war list. Because Kraken gets pretty close, but I think Striker 3 will be the nudge I need to finally be able to put only horses on the table. Well, horses, I mean,
still warjack points.
Right. Whereas in Kray, it's kind of curious because in Kray's case, even the warjacks are cavalry. So I could theoretically run an entirely cavalry list. But anyways. Other than that, not a whole lot of news to report about this week, which is okay. Why don't we start talking about the battles? We'll start with Nick. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the setup for what happened for you?
Okay, well, I mean, we just showed up at the local game store, the Game Chamber. A little plug there.
Yes. And, free stuff, Game Chamber. Give us free stuff. Keep going.
Yeah, good luck with that. and just, you know, tried to find some random people who we're going to play against. And so, yeah, I squared off against a Legion player. I asked him a little bit about himself. He'd been playing for about a year, about the same as us, really. Played 35 points. He was playing Ryas. I was playing Ozzian. We kind of just randomly selected. I asked him what faction he was playing, and then I just picked Ozzian based on that. Mm. But yeah, it was the setup. We just kind of, you know, they had blank tables out. I just kind of we just kind of grabbed a bunch of stuff from the shelf and just threw it down the table in rather haphazard fashion. I actually placed a very large forest in my own side of the board, which is pretty stupid. Oh well.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your Ozzian list?
Okay, so the list I took was a 35-point Ozzian list that I'd been working on a little bit in preparation for this 35-point tournament coming up. And because, I mean, we don't play 35 points very often, so it's really hard to cut out 15 points from your 50-point list and still have it work. But I think this one's pretty good. So it's Ozzian with a Banshee, Arcanist, full Helms with UA, full Rifleman with UA, Stormfall Archers, Houseguard Thane, and Ion and Hold.
Cool.
So there's some pretty decent armor cracking in the Banshee, and basically Stormfalls plus Ion and Hold, or Ion and Hold and anybody is pretty good armor cracking.
Yes. Really.
Yeah. So that's not a problem. You know, they have the Houseguard Thane with the Rifleman to ignore stealth. They have Stormfalls can also ignore low armor stealth. Halberdiers have a awesome, crazy melee threat range. You could combine that with Iron and Holt for some serious melee damage output.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it's a really versatile list. You can play in a lot of different ways. Most importantly, I'm very familiar with it, and I think I can play it very quickly, at least as quickly as any other list I have,
right.
Because it's very straightforward. Basically, you know, move stuff up, fire, blah blah blah. You know, it's very, I'm very comfortable with it. That's the main thing. And you know, a lot of people say that when you're making tournament lists, the most important thing is that you're going to play a list that you're comfortable with. It's more important than playing a strong list.
Right.
Well, I mean, obviously there's a trade-off. But
is there anything you would consider switching for this list?
I'm really not sure. I mean, I'd like to have Sentinels instead of Halberdiers.
Right.
But I don't have points for it. And just the fact that the Halberdiers still out-threat the Sentinels by, you know, by a fair margin, by like 3 inches or something like that,
right.
Because of the Houseguard thing, like, it's tough to give up on that, on that extra threat range. Because, you know, although, you know, Halberdiers won't kill the things that Sentinels will kill as easily as they'll kill them,
mm-hmm.
but they are slightly more survivable because the armor 18 and defense 13, and they have the mini feet to make them hits, and they have this the crazy threat range. It's 15-inch charge with the Houseguard Thane and Quicken is bonkers.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful 35-point list, to be honest. Okay, so your opponent, what was his name?
I never asked him if I could use his name, so I wasn't going to say it.
Okay, that guy. So
the Legion player.
There we go. The Legion player, who was playing Ryas, brought a Throne of Everblight, a full unit of Nyss Archers with their UA, Scythian, Shredder, and
two Shredders,
a Forsaken, and a Succubus.
And so, a Nephilim Soldier.
Oh, yeah. So the Soldier, well, whatever. I'm sure everybody...
Soldier's a light war beast, speed 6 with flights. He's got a reach weapon. I think it's power 16.
Oh, there we go. No, that's not too bad. It's an interesting list. Not a lot of bodies, but extremely versatile at taking out almost exactly what you brought. It's got a lot of infantry clearing, basically.
It certainly does, yes.
So, you know, dual shot on the archers, and, you know, the throne is basically designed as a small version of the Kraken, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, no, it's really good. It's got 3 initial attacks, Ryze's feet can give it a 4th. Every time it kills something, it gets a corpse token. It can use corpse tokens to buy attacks, boost, and all kinds of other stuff. So yeah. It's just, you know, it's pretty good.
My only complaint about it is that I hate the model.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan either. I don't
really,
know. I
really hate the model.
Yeah, it's an awesome model rules wise, but I'm not a fan. It's so tall and it looks like annoying to move around. It's cool. I mean, it looks crazy, but I just don't like just how big it is.
Okay, so who won initiative?
I won the initiative and I chose to go first because Legion.
Very good reason.
So I told him he could pick table side, and he was surprised at that. I guess he'd been playing Prime Rules instead of
Yeah, my
Steamroller.
opponent as well. It seems that we're in something of a minority for using Steamroller in house games.
Maybe I don't know. But anyway, I think they make the game more fun personally.
I
But
agree. It's
anyway.
certainly more balanced at the very least.
Definitely more balanced, and for me, more fun at least. Yeah. Anyway, so he picks table side, and he just picks the side he happened to be standing on, so that was fine. It didn't really matter that much. Although actually, I would have liked that side better, but although the elevation does come into play, and we'll talk about that later. But he deploys with his Ryas and her battle group on the left side of the table.
Wait,
All
sorry.
these are going to be from my perspective. So
You deploy first, right?
I deploy forest first. Yeah, sorry. So Ozzian is just to the right of the forest, and then to his left is Ion and Holt, and then on the left side of the forest is the Banshee with the pet Arcanist, or possibly the opposite. Arcanist, the pet Banshee. To Ozzian's right is the full unit of Halbs, and behind them is the Rifleman. And then I have the House Guard Thane to their left, or to their right, and then the Stormfall's on the far right flank.
I love that you can't keep your left and right straight.
Yeah, I'm stuck at that.
Okay, and your opponent again, he set up the Throne of Everblight right in the middle of his deployment zone, which I suppose technically he had to do first, but whatever. And then the archers went to your right side in his forest, and basically all of his war beasts plus his support models and Ryas herself. Ryas is a chick. Yeah, so Ryas went.
Ninja.
Sorry?
Ninja chick.
Right, ninja. Yeah, went to the left of the throne, more or less opposite Ozzian and the Phoenix. And what scenario were you guys playing?
The scenario was incoming,
Right.
which is two horizontal 12 by 6 zones. There's a friendly and an enemy zone. There's two objectives on the center line. And they give boosted damage rolls to light artillery if you're dominating them. Because this is the 2013 version that we're playing this because that's what they had lying around in the shop.
Ah, I was going to ask why you were playing 2013.
Yeah, well, no one had the 14 booklet lying around, so.
Oh, you should have asked me, man.
Yeah, too bad.
Anyways. Okay, so very cool. So therefore, you get to go first.
Yes, so my first turn, I don't allocate any focus. The Arcanist moves up and pops focus to the Banshee. The Banshee runs up, it's 10 inches, getting almost to the zone. The Stormfalls run up over the hill, their full distance. Ozzian puts Quicken on the Halberdiers and Shadowstorm on the Rifles. And then he moves as far as he can towards the Banshee in the forest. Because I had intended to put Admonition on the Banshee, and it's only a 6-inch range spell, so I kind of needed to get in there. But I couldn't get in range this turn. So anyway, Iron and Holt run straight up through the forest as far as they can. The Huskard Thane puts Desperate Pace on the Halberdiers, and they run as far forward as they can. They're really choked up by the forest and the hill, so I lose a lot of distance that way. And actually, I forgot about Quicken during this movement, so I actually could have moved them an extra 4 inches than I actually did. Crap. They still got really far up, and then there's still threatening charge range next turn if he moves his guys up at all.
Right.
So that's good for me. So they move up their full distance and just spread out through the middle of the table. And the Riflemen, they move up behind the Stormfalls and the Halberdiers. That's my turn.
Cool. Not much to say about this turn, really. Basically, standard first turn one things, everything runs. So, what about Legion? What did he do?
So Legion, turn one. Okay, so obviously picks for this, but trying to remember. Basically, all her stuff moves up, so archers move up and through the forest and spread as much as they can. About half the units in the forest, half of it's out. The throne moves up to behind the opponent's objective. Scythian runs up between the wall and the house. The soldier and Ryas both move up to behind the linear objective on his side of the board. And then the Shredders and the Succubi move around and give basically everyone tenacity. So, like, the Throne gets it, Rias gets it, the Soldier gets it, I think. The Scything gets it, maybe some of the Shredders get it. I don't know. Everything gets tenacity. Tenacity right. everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think that's basically his turn. Just kind of a preparation turn. Oh, and also Rapport got put on the Scything.
Ah. Yeah, you should just be grateful that everything didn't get spiny growth, I guess.
Yeah, no Carnivian, so...
Yeah. Speaking of which, no Carnivian? No Angelius? This is...
You know, surprisingly, I don't think Carnivians are that popular among Legion people.
What?
Because they're 11 points. But it's 11 points is a lot to swallow. But it's a really good NS as well. So, I mean, it's hard to knock someone for taking Carnivian. But, I mean, it is expensive.
All right. Fair enough.
Oh, yeah, anyway. So, my turn two. I upkeep Quicken and Shatterstorm. The Arcanist pops focus to the Banshee. The Banshee moves up and fires at the Scythian. Now, I was trying to move up just into that window between 11 and 12 inches that is in my gun range and out of his threat range. I fail because when I measure it, I'm actually within 11, so that's too bad. But it's better than missing a shot. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, kind of. Anyway.
Probably.
So I fire, I boost the hits, and I knock him down. I do a couple points of damage. I unholt. They move out of the forest, so now they're unrestricted. The Stormfalls move forward off of the hill, and they do a couple brutal shots. They do all fire brutal shots on the Throne.
Mm.
One of them was short by like a quarter of an inch, and his shot scattered takes out an archer, so that's okay.
Nice.
The other three are all in range. One misses and it does nothing. The other two hit and just do kind of light damage. I do just bad damage rolls. It's dice minus eight, right? So I mean, three dice. Still they were bad rolls.
Right.
So Huskar Thane moves up and gives Desperate Pace to the Halberdiers. The Halberdiers charge in and pop their mini-feet this turn. So three of them charge in Scythian, three of them charge the Soldier, and two of them charge the Throne. Two of them on the Scythian make it, all of them on the Soldier make it, and one of them on the Throne makes it. The two on the Scythian do pretty decent damage. The ones on the Soldier do pretty heavy damage, and the Throne, I think, fails the wound.
Ouch.
So after those guys, the UA and one other guy just kind of ran up into the middle of the table, and one other guy ran to the right side just to kind of get in the way of stuff, like mm-hmm. in case the Throne wants to charge or whatever. I tried my best anyway. There's a big suppressing fire template in the way, so I couldn't really go into that because I would die.
Right.
After that, the rifles move up on the hill. They do some CRAs and archers. They take out about three or four of them. I can't really remember. So that was my turn two.
That's not bad.
It was a good start. I mean, I didn't kill anything. It would have been nice to have taken out that Soldier.
Yeah. And as we all know.
It was pretty close. I mean, I crippled the Spirit on both the Scythian and the Soldier this turn. So that was pretty good. Although, Hordes, they could just heal them anyway.
Yeah. That still drives me a little bit nuts, but whatever.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, like, it seems to me like... It'd be nice if it was a little bit harder to do the healing.
Exactly.
Like, rather than just, you just do it, kind of thing. Like, maybe there's a skill check or something. Yeah, whatever. I'm not going to tell them how to balance the game.
Yeah.
Oh,
I totally will. I make no such compulsion.
Yes.
All right.
So, this turn is a little bit of a bloodbath. The Legion turn two. First thing happens, Rias upkeeps Rapport on the Scythian. So now, what that does is it makes it so his Matin Rat is her Matin Rat. So,
wow. Ouch.
Yeah.
God, I would kill for that in Signar. Anyways, keep going.
Yeah, of course. Okay. So Rias pops her feet. She advances with her acrobatics right over top of my halbs. She gets into position, so she's in range of four of them, and she slaughters them all. And then she sprints back behind cover. The Shredder near the Throne rabbits, and it moves into melee with both the halbs that charge the Throne, and it kills them both. So Rias's feet is kind of janky. What it does is it gives you an extra melee attack, and also the first thing you attack, if you hit it, you get to place yourself anywhere in base-to-base contact with it.
Wow.
So it's kind of janky. I can see how it could come in handy once in a while, but it's pretty situational and just like, I don't know. It's just a weird kind of feat. The extra attack is awesome, though. That's great.
Yeah.
And you can't argue with an extra attack.
No.
But the placing part is just kind of weird. Anyway. The Shredder kills both those halbs with his three possible attacks. The Throne charges the Stormfalls. It kills two of them, but thankfully he missed a bunch of attack rolls, which was good. Because his rat is only, his mat is, I think, six.
Okay.
Or seven, maybe? I forget. Yeah, seven. And so he just rolled a lot of bad rolls. And so, yeah, that was good for me. And then after he does that, he did his Battle Wizard spray, and it went right across the middle of my rifleman and onto my UA, which was too bad.
Wow. So
it took out two riflemen, the banner, and the officer with one spray. So that, I was clumping, so it was my own fault. But I wanted to have all my guys on the hill, right? So.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, the soldier. It flies over some stuff, and it kills both halberdiers that are engaging the Scythian. It takes his whole stack and the feet attack. The Scythian charges the Hal banner that's in the middle of the table. Because he charged the banner because it doesn't have set defense, which is kind of clever.
That is very clever.
So he and the Scythian kills all three of those guys just without even breaking a sweat.
Not a surprise, really.
Yeah, the archers, they move up and they fire on my riflemen, and they kill about two or three of them. My guys are on the hill, though, so it is tough for them to hit them.
Fair enough.
And then the Forsaken moves up and pulls the Fury off the Scythian, which is important for later turns.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you're looking at the pictures that you took, that the end of your turn, the entire center zone is basically, you know, choked with elves. And then at the end of his turn, all of a sudden, it's a lot more forlorn and empty.
Yeah,
and basically, there's just
gone.
One Scythian sitting there.
They're all gone.
It's incredible. But, I mean, your Banshee is still intact. You've still got your Rifleman, I'm assuming, didn't break. You know, your Stormfalls aren't really that useful as long as they're being engaged by the Throne. But if you can kill the Throne, you're still not in a bad position. And Ion and Holt on their own are, you know, pretty powerful.
So. Yeah, no, I mean, like, you know, that hurt. But I knew I was going to lose most of my halves. I didn't think I would lose all but one, but I knew I was going to lose lots.
Yeah.
My turn three, I'm looking at the board and I can measure my control area, and the Scythian and the Throne are both easily within my feet range. So I think I can actually have an Ossian feat and not die the next turn after, possibly, for once.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it could happen. So I want to use my range stuff to take out the Throne. I want to use my Banshee to take out the Scythian. But I'm measuring, like, Ossian and the Banshee are almost parallel with the charge range with the charge lane the Banshee has to take on the Scythian. So I can see that I almost definitely need to put Quicken on the Banshee, which really sucks because I really want Admonition on him. But it's either that or I don't kill the Scythian.
Right.
Except that I'm going to lose my Banshee next turn, and I plan for this. So Ossian drops Shadowstorm and Quicken because there's only one Halb left, and the Shadowstorm, his archers are spread out so much it's never going to come into play.
Right.
And so I'd rather have the focus. The Arcanist moves up, and he puts Concentrated Power in the Banshee, plus two damage. Ion and Holt move towards the Throne, and Ion kisses it, and Holt does like eight damage, which is bonkers. He's a power 12 hand cannon. He goes up to 14 with the kiss.
And
he rolled just fire, and he just put so much damage on it. It was awesome. So it took like half the health almost.
You know, I have one little beef about one minor beef about Ion and Holt is the fact that you can't have Holt charge and Ion kiss on the same turn, because if you that would be awesome.
Yeah, you know, it'd be nice if they changed the rules for character units so they could do more stuff like that. But,
yeah.
I mean, at the same time, now the Will of the Shadow is going to totally rape you all over a log every single time. So
I'd
maybe stay the way they are.
I said nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Leave Holt the way he is.
Anyway, so then Ossian moves up. He puts Quicken on the Banshee, moves towards the Throne as far as he can, and pops his feet.
Was there a reason you did that after Ion and Holt?
Ion and Holt are not friendly faction.
Oh, that's right. They're not retribution. Right. Okay.
So they wouldn't benefit from it. Yeah. But yeah, if Holt would benefit from the feat, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Then I might not have a dead Throne.
Yeah, that would have been 16 points of damage at least.
Yeah.
It's funny that it's Ion and Holt are the only non-partisan mercenaries you guys can take, I think.
Linus is non-partisan. Madeline Corbeau is non-partisan. Dalia and Scareth are non-partisan. The only partisans we have are Silas and Iris.
Oh. I take it back. All right, onwards.
Iron Holt puts some damage on. Ossian moves up. Oh, sorry, he quickens the Banshee, moves towards the throne, pops his feet. Scythe and the throne are both in range. That's good. Houseguard Thane fires on the throne. Doesn't wound it, though.
Hmm.
Which, power 10, 3 dice, yeah. Power 10 still bugs me anyway, sorry. the rifles fire on the throne, just taking single shots. Actually, that's all they can do. Anyway, they plink away at it a little bit at a time. 3 dice at its dice minus 8. And just, you know, they plink away at a couple damage at a time. The second last guy kills it.
Wow.
Which is great, because, I mean, if it wasn't dead, that would really suck.
Yes.
And the last guy fires at an archer, and I think he misses. The throne's gone. So the halberdiers and the stormfalls are now they're cleared up. So the last the halberdier, it charges the UA for the archers, and it misses its attack, which sucks. The banshee charges the scythian. It gets in range. When I measure it, I was absolutely right. I needed the quicken in order to get there, so I made the right decision, even though it hurts.
Right.
so it gets in range, and it buries the Scythian after the second attack. Well, you know, power 19 took it down to like 3 boxes, and then the little arm, it killed it.
Very nice.
And then Stormfalls, they aim and take some shots at archers, and they just kill 2 of them. They're too spread out, so the AoEs can't do anything, so it kind of sucks.
But... Right. Well, you could have fired Starfalls, I suppose. Isn't that a 5-inch AoE?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
They're all 3s. That's my turn. Feel pretty good about it. You know, I took his 2 biggest models off the table.
Yeah.
I took out 19 points of models. That's pretty good.
And in exchange for a Banshee, that's not a bad trade.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've done
the
worse.
Loss of the War Beast for his Warlock is much much more potent than the loss of a Warjack for your caster, right?
Yes and no. I mean, he's only Fury 5, so he doesn't need a whole lot of Fury, right. And he's still got 2 Shredders and a Soldier, so that's 7 Fury available to him. So it didn't really hurt him that much, but it's the heavy hitting that is gone, which is good. Although Arias is a Weapon Master, so yeah, it's going to hurt.
Yeah. Okay.
So Legion turn 3... The Shredder Rabbids, and it moves over to the last Halberdier and kills him. The Archers take shots at the Rifleman, I think like all the shots miss.
Huh.
Like he misses a ton of attack rolls there. I think he might have missed all of them.
Hmm.
The soldier slams the Banshee. He boosts the hit because it's going to be like he's minus 2 mat on slam against a larger base.
Right.
And so he boosts the hit and slams it 2 inches. It does minor damage to the Banshee, but it's knocked down now.
Okay.
The Forsaken moves up and blight bombs the Banshee. He's got 2 focus on him because I didn't need 3 to kill the Scythian. And so that means it's power 8 at 4d6.
Wow.
Because, you know, I had too much focus. Which, you know, it can hurt. You know, it's dangerous to marks against Legion.
A lesson for everyone.
Unfortunately for him, power 8 still sucks, and even at 4d6, it does no damage.
Right.
So Ryze moves forward and takes a few swings of the Banshee, leaves him with about 6 boxes, cripple his Cortex and his little arm, which is bad, but could be worse.
Yeah.
The other Shredder Rabbids comes up and attacks the Banshee as well, but even with boosted 10s, no damage. And then the Succubus comes up and puts Tenacity on Ryze.
That was a great turn for you.
Yeah, not a lot happened. It was pretty good. You know, I didn't actually lose the Banshee, although he was functionally, you know, useless now. Well, not useless, but just like without focus, it's hard to do much.
Right.
Because there's no point attacking Raya. She's defense 16. I'll see what I can do against his beasts.
Well, can you slam your Banshee? Ozzyan doesn't have Force Hammer, does he?
No, that's wrong.
See, that would be perfect. A situation like this.
Yeah, it would be.
Right over top of it?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have anything that can slam left, so.
That's too bad. Okay. What did you do?
So, on my turn, I dropped my upkeeps, because I don't need Quicken on the Banshee, and, that was it. I can't allocate it to Banshee, because it has no Cortex, so I keep it all. The Arcanist moves up, but he's unfortunately out of range to power boost the Banshee. Or, sorry, not power boost, I was going to concentrate power him.
Right.
So he can kill things. Ossian fires on the soldier and hits him, doing decent damage. But more importantly, it's the 4-inch bubble pops up around him that lowers defense everything near it. Right, unfortunately, right. He was just like an eighth of an inch out of range for Frias. Not that I think I would have probably gone for her anyway, but it would have been nice to have the option.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Shredder and the Soldier were both at minus 4 defense, which is good. Or minus 2 defense. Although I kind of derped this a little bit because my plan was to actually put Admonition on Ozzy and move up into the zone. And then before shooting, but I totally forgot about it. And so after I shot, I was like, oh, shit. which, you know, it's just, it's crappy because that would have been points, right? well, I might have died, but who knows?
Yeah.
After that, Ayana kisses the Forsaken, and then Holt kills it and fires on the Shredder, but doesn't damage it.
Hmm.
The rifles aim, and they take out, like, 5 of the remaining 7 archers, just slaughter them all. I needed 6s to hit while aiming, I think.
Oh,
and
not
I
bad.
Just was rolling 6s all day. And like, about, I think, 4 of my rolls came up, like, as a 6. So I was right on the edge there.
Yeah.
But I killed a whole slew of archers, which was awesome. And the House Guard Thane moves up, and he fired on the Shredder, but he was out of range. Last thing, the Banshee, he just stands up, forfeits move, and he swings at the Shredder with his crippled arm, but missed. And then he swings at the Soldier with a big arm and kills it. Which
nice.
Is great. So now the only Fury source he has left is 2 Shredders.
So the only thing I can comment about this particular turn is that it really looks like Ion and Holt are standing a little bit close together as 2 of your most powerful pieces left on the table. But
They're always kind of together, but it doesn't really affect anything. I guess the only problem with it is that something could come up and kill both of them if it had 2 attacks, but yeah. I mean...
Like
yeah.
A, I don't know.
No, you're right, it's a problem.
A Rias or, say... A Shredder, so
potentially, yeah, yeah, that could be a problem.
Okay,
Legion 4. Legion turn 4. The right Shredder. I don't know exactly what he was doing with this stuff, but all he does is just advance forward. So I think he might have been outside of the control range, possibly. I don't know. That might have been what happened. So maybe he couldn't force because he was out. But anyway, all he did was advance forward. He didn't do anything else. He was out of range for anybody. Next up, the left Shredder rabbits and it tries to attack the Banshee. Again, fails to wound him completely.
Nice.
Armor 19's the thing, let me say.
Yeah.
Twice he rolled, and both times he rolled my damage value. So, you know, it was good. Rias advances up to the Arcanist and then kills him and then sprints out to the left and just to like, the far left side of my zone. And she puts occultation on herself. She had it on her shelf. I think she did it, like, maybe at the beginning of the turn. I forget.
Right.
I forgot this turn about the wailing from the Banshee and that no spells could have been cast around him.
Oh.
So I don't remember what spells were done, but...
But they couldn't have been, yeah.
But, yeah, so it might have made a difference.
Yeah.
Anyway, too bad. Too bad, so sad. Forgot about it. The archers then fire on Holt and kill him. And that was his turn. Oh, he moved the succubus just over to the left a bit. Just, I'm not sure why, just kind of be around. I know why. It was so that the succubus could be within 6 inches of the Shredder and within Rias, so he could put tenacity in Rias. That's why. Mm. And then he ended his turn, and he scored 3 points for dominating the enemy zone. At which point, I was like, alarm bells. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a scenario. That's what those big round boxes are. So on my turn, I'm like, oh, okay, scenario. Yeah, this is important. I start off no allocation. My 2 riflemen, 2 of them CRA the Shredder and kill it, and then 3 of them CRA the Archer UA and miss. He's defense 15 in the forest, so it's tough. I think I needed an 8. Yeah, I needed an 8. No, I needed a 6. I still missed. Anyway, it sucks. Ozzyan moves up, toes into my friendly zone, puts admonition on himself, and fires at the succubus. Unfortunately, I miss.
Ooh.
I think I didn't boost the hit because I wanted to keep my focus on me. I can't remember. Anyway, I missed either way. The Banshee just kind of swings around the Shredder just to get his toe into the zone. And he swings at the Shredder and misses.
Huh.
After that, then the House Guard Thane... runs around into the into my enemy zone, and I dominate and control for 3 points as well. So now it's 3-3.
Wait, because you dominate your own zone and you control the enemy zone. Got it.
So yeah, that was pretty cool. I woke up and finally realized there was a scenario. unfortunately, leading to turn six, to turn five, all he has to do is kill the Banshee, and then he dominates the enemy zone to win the game. And so he does that. He charges the Banshee, kills it with, I think, the second attack, and ends the game to win with 6 control points.
Wah, wah. Well, that's actually a pretty solid game, but on the last turn...
It was a bloodbath.
On the last turn, why didn't you run Ayana into the zone?
I didn't think about it. It would have been a pretty good idea. She can't control.
No, but she can contest.
She could have contested. Yeah. And, I mean, that would have been a much better idea than what I did, because then Ryze would have to have killed two things in order to win.
Yeah.
And I would have had the game, because on my turn, I would have just basically activated and gone to 5 points.
Yep.
With a...
Interesting. So, pretty solid game you played.
Yeah, no, it was pretty solid. It was a bloodbath. Like, it was a big attrition fest. Probably the most even attrition fest I've ever been a part of.
Mm. So, before we move on to my game, which is going to be a slightly shorter portion, why don't we quickly talk about how you performed and rate you kind of internally about the game?
Well, we should do the standard rating system, right?
Right. So, the standard rating. But in this case, because we don't have your opponent on the podcast, it'll just be your perspective of how you did and my perspective of how you did. And we'll keep that, you know, relatively short, and then we'll go on to my game, if that's okay for you.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So how do you feel you used Ossian's feet this game?
I think that this is actually the best use of Ossian's feet I've ever had.
I think I would agree with you, because you used it, and Ossian didn't die.
You know, I didn't overextend myself. I just took out what was nearby, and just, you know, settled for what I could get, kind of thing. Like, I didn't try to do too much with it.
Right.
So I think this is as good as I've ever done with Ossian's feet. Mm. I don't think it's good enough for a five, because it didn't decimate the entire enemy army. Actually, kind of maybe did, but anyway, it just didn't devastate the army. But I think it was really good. Like, it's definitely a four. And my personal best for Ossian's feet.
I'm in complete agreement. I think this was a fantastic use of his feet. Getting the riflemen, which are POW-10s, POW-11s?
POW-10.
POW-10. Yeah, getting them to kill the throne, that's respectable, man. I would be pushing for a five. I'd be giving a very serious look at a five if you shot the Scythian to death. But because you charged with your Banshee and it didn't actually affect, then, you know.
True.
So this was a four. So excellent work on that. Tactically, how do you feel you did?
Tactically, well, I made some mistakes. Little things like not getting admonition up on the Banshee early, having to put Quicken on him in order to kill the Scythian. I don't know if I can call it – it's not a tactical mistake. It was just I did what I had to do. So it wasn't a mistake, but it was just too bad.
Right.
Tactical mistakes would be on the turn, I forget which turn it was, maybe four, I think turn four, where Ossian shot first instead of moving first. I think that I could have been in a very good position to win on scenario if I had thought before I shot.
Right.
So that I think is a tactical error.
Right. So you thinking three-ish?
I think three is probably good for this one, yeah. Like, you know, it'd be a high three, but
okay.
I mean, I think it was a solid game.
I concur. Scenario awareness. I'm going to give you a one for this, I think. Well, no, one probably overly harsh, but this was definitely not a good scenario game for you, which is weird. You're normally very aware of scenario.
Yeah, I think I deserve a two because I woke up after the fact.
Yes.
Just the fact that I had a very good chance to win on scenario. If I had realized a turn sooner that there was a scenario, that it's unfortunate. That's all. So yeah, I think a solid two. Well, you know, a weak two, for that. Just because, you know, I did come back and come close in the scenario, but it just wasn't soon enough, and I didn't have enough to cram in the zone.
How'd you feel about your luck?
The luck was hit and miss. I mean, when my riflemen were firing at that throne, like, it was dice minus 8 on 3 dice, and I don't think I ever did more than 2 damage with any one of them. So, I mean, they were very average rolls.
Right.
And not really any good spikes. I think one spike of the 6 or 7 shots I took.
Hmm.
So, I mean, my luck was very average. I'd give it a 3.
All right. Fair enough. Time use. since we were actually practicing for time turns, I think it might be useful to try to fold these into our overall analysis of the games. And, you know, this is, what, the second time we've ever done 7-minute time turns? So how did you feel about your ability to try to get things done in a chronologically speedy fashion?
Well, I actually didn't use a timer.
But
we were... We talked about it, and we both were trying to go as fast as we could.
Right.
But just I was trying to take pictures with my phone, so I didn't want to be timing and picturing at the same time. Just right, right. Didn't really work out very easily. I need to actually maybe buy one of those egg timers from the dollar store. It'd be a lot easier. Anyway, the time use. I mean, it was okay. I still feel like I'm way slow, but I could have played this game a touch faster.
Right.
But it's hard, man. Like when you have a lot of units, I don't understand how you can activate 3 units in 7 minutes. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
I just physically moving the models takes me longer than that. Yeah. And you have to put some thought into it. I mean, you can't just autopilot. It just doesn't work. Not for me. I don't know. I think I just need more practice. That's all. I mean, I guess, you know, once you play a list 50 times, then I think it becomes a lot more autopilot, and so then you can actually do that kind of thing. But I'm definitely not there yet. I think that most of our gaming group is not there yet either.
Fair enough. Okay, and lastly, Derptitude.
Derptitude.
Well, why don't I start with this one?
Yes, please.
Obviously, the admonition issue, not dominating your friendly zone on that one turn, that was a derp. Other than that... Not contesting the zone with Ayana on the final turn, that was a derp. And I don't think anything else that you did really classifies on the derp scale. You know, it may not have been tactically optimal, but, you know, it wasn't a mistake per se.
Mm.
How do you feel?
Yeah, no, that's about right. I mean, the Ayana thing, yeah, I mean, I didn't think about that at all. And that would have really made a big difference. I could have run her into the zone at least, you know, far enough away from Ozzyan that he couldn't have gotten in range of both of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that could have really helped my game a lot. But
I mean,
oh well.
even saying, I don't know if it would have been a good idea, but you could have run the House Guard Thane into your zone as well to contest and then have run Ozzyan towards the enemy zone because he only had 2 things left to protect his own zone, maybe even 1 archer at that point. Ozzyan could dominate, you know, but now we're talking, you know, hypotheticals.
It'd be tough for him to get there. He's only speed 6.
Yeah, he can quicken himself.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, so he could run 16 inches,
yeah.
Right? No, 14 inches.
14.
No, 16.
16 inches, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah, that is pretty legit. But if he – actually, no, he can't quicken himself and run 16.
Not on the same turn. Yeah.
And walk 8.
Yeah. he could also charge 11, but –
Yeah, I mean, against Ryas, I was pretty sure that admonition was more important to have on Ozzyan than Quicken.
Probably. Well, as long as he's on the same side of the table. Anyways, so yeah, I think Derp 2 is probably solid. Solid game. A couple minor mistakes that ended up costing it for you, but, you know, nothing slap your forehead stupid. So.
No, it was pretty solid.
Yeah.
And a really fun game, by the way. The guy I was playing with was a good player, and, you know, it was a fun game. We were both pretty relaxed, and it was a good time.
Great. Okay, so we're going to go on to my battle. Now, the guy I was playing against was also named Nick, which is just ironic because everyone I seem to play in War Machine is named Nick. There's now 3 Nicks I play or have played. Ozzy is named Nick, obviously. Mofo Nick is named Nick. And then this guy, Nick as well. He's Rockwell on the forums, but he's a newcomer. He's only played 3 times. And as soon as he said that, I'm like, oh, crap. Because I was really hoping to try out my tournament list. But I can't practice a tournament list against a newcomer. I'm just going to, like, curb stomp him. Especially with Signar. It's just rude. So he told me, like, okay, I've got a 35-point list. I'm running a Krios list. These are the stuff I've got. You know. And so I kind of crafted a list of Signar's greatest hits, for lack of a better term. I didn't want to go easy on him. But at the same time, I didn't want to just, you know, introduce him to my boot over and over and over again. And so I picked a Peace Striker list that was 35.
First of all, I call bullshit on that because you brought the Black 13th.
Well, okay, so this was the thing. That the whole concept behind my list was, again, the concept of a Signar's greatest hits. So not necessarily a good list, but a list that would highlight every kind of BS that you're going to run into when you're playing Signar. And the Black 13th is one of the biggest pieces of BS you're going to run into when you're playing Signar. Like,
that is true, although I think you should have started off with Gun Mages, not Black 13th.
I think the Gun Mages are better. I think the Gun Mages are a more powerful unit than the Black 13th, and especially against a newcomer. You know, there's... It's a tough call. The ATGM are, you know, 7 shots that can all get sniped natively and ignore cover and concealment, ignore concealment and stealth and all this kind of stuff that it's really kind of difficult to work around. Whereas the Black 13th, they've only got half so many attacks. They don't natively have snipe, and their ammunition choices are a little bit more situationally useful rather than the ATGM, which I think are always better. Almost always better. I mean, the Black 13th, a great unit, 4 points, no question. But either way, it was a judgment call. So
can I just say, I'm looking through your pictures right now, and I have no idea what's going on in this table.
The problem is
there's just models everywhere.
Yeah, and yeah. And on top of that, the pictures right now aren't in order, so it's not really all that useful. Because the first picture is the first picture of the game, and the second picture is the last picture of the game. So, anyways.
Oh, I see. Maybe you forgot to take a deployment picture. Is that what happened?
I didn't take a deployment picture, yes. Okay. I took a picture on the end of turn one, unfortunately.
End of your turn one or turn one?
The end of my turn one.
Okay. Yeah, because like, your opponent deployed very curiously as well.
Yes, he did. We'll get to that in a moment. Okay, so I took a prime striker list, striker one, and with that I took Rowdy and a Lancer. Rowdy is kind of like a standard Signar Warjack, who's a bit more expensive, a bit more powerful than your average Ironclad, and the Lancer because it's an arc node, and Striker really can use an arc node. And it's an important thing to get grips with when you're just learning War Machine. The power of the arc nodes, I think, is something a lot of people don't understand. So after I had the Warjacks, I took a Squire, of course, because, again, Signar, and a Journeywoman Warcaster, not because I really needed Arcane Shield, not because I needed a Journeywoman Warcaster, but because... Again, I wanted my opponent to get an idea of the kind of things that Signar will standardly field in an army. I took a full unit of Stormguard.
Buffet of bullshit.
Yes, exactly. So I took a full unit of Stormguard, the vanilla Stormguard, and not an optimal unit, but I wanted some way to get Electro Leaps into the list, and they have Electro Leaps. They've got a lot of them, so I figured that was good. And also, they're not a superpower list. They're not an optimal choice. And it was basically between them and the Trenchers. And to be honest, I was worried the Trenchers would just mulch his entire army, because Dig In plus CRAs are really powerful against the right opponent. And the Protected is the right opponent. That's who you want to take the Trenchers against. So, full unit of Stormguard. I took the Black 13th, as Nick has already mocked me for my decision. And a unit of Rangers, because if any unit in Signar gets more hate, I do not know what it is. Everybody despises Rangers.
I thought the B-13 were more despised.
I don't think so, because not as... Well, it's possible, but the B-13th are characters, whereas the Rangers can be in every freaking list. Yeah. So, took a full unit of... a unit of Rangers, only one size. And then lastly, I spent my last 2 points on 2 Stormcallers.
One size fits all bullshit.
Yeah. 2 Stormcallers because, again, you know, it's one of those things that you're going to have to get to used to when you're playing against Signar. Stealth, don't care. Cover, don't care. You know, as long as I have line of sight, I'm going to hit you.
Don't forget defense. Don't care about defense.
Oh, don't care about defense, yeah. Just 8 or less. And so that was it. My opponent was bringing, as I mentioned, a Prime Krios, Krios 1 list, and he was basically fielding everything he had to this point for Menoth. Literally put every model he owned on the table. He was hoping that a unit of Choir, which he had ordered, would have shown up, but they did not. And I offered to lend him my unit of Choir.
Choir is sad.
Yeah, yeah. And he was saying, like, well, I don't really need it. And I'm like, no, you really need it. Let me lend you my Choir. And he's like, no, I'll be fine without it. And I'm like, all right, fine.
Well, he was only running a Light and the Avatar, right?
Yes. So he had P. Krios, and Krios was taking a Devout, which is a Shield Guard Warjack for Menoth.
Good choice against Signar.
An excellent choice. And then he had the Avatar, which of course is not really in his battle group, but, you know, great Warjack overall.
Forgive my ignorance about Menoth, but the Choir can work on the Avatar though, right?
Yep. Choir doesn't work on a battle group, it just works on Warjacks. In fact, Choir Avatars is one of the reasons to play Menoth, because it's a power 21, mat 10. So, it's a thing. Okay, so Devout...
Actually, come think of it. I wonder if he counted the Avatar in his jack points.
He did not.
So the devout was enough to take up the.
Yeah, Kreos only gets 5.
Oh, wow, okay. Cool.
Yeah. So in addition to those, he had a full unit of Exemplar Errants. Great unit. Very solid choice. And then the Covenant of Menoth, which is a really powerful utility piece, but in this particular list, kind of a suboptimal choice, because the real reason you take the Covenant with the Exemplar Errants is you take Rupert, you give the Errants tough, and then you give them no knockdown. So every time you hit and kill them, they don't get knocked down if they tough. And it's an incredibly good amount of synergy. In this list, there wasn't really anything the Covenant was doing, but he needed to get to 35 points. It was the only models he had. They went on the table. And that was it. Oh, no, sorry. He also... I lie. He had 2 Paladins of the Wall, and the High Paladin, Vilman, and he had Nicaea, which is one of the assassins for Menoth. So 4 solos, and powerful ones at that. And we rolled for initiative. I won the initiative. I went first because, again, guns, Signar, you know, you go first. And he chose tableside. And we decided not to play a scenario because, again, 4th game ever, he didn't want to make it too complicated. Just wanted to run assassination, which I was okay with because, honestly, not running a scenario is probably better for Kreos in this situation. But either way, want to keep it simple. So... I deployed basically all my Storm Guard right in the middle, put Routing on one side, put the Lancer on the other, put one Stormcaller at the extreme flanks on either side, put the Black 13th close to the 3 tiny forests we had on our table, and that was it. My Rangers have advanced deploy. He puts... Okay, so if you're looking at the pictures, you have to remember that this is his 4th game of War Machine ever.
That so explains a lot.
He put the Avatar, his Devout, and Kreos, plus all of his High Shields... all tucked away in the far right corner, like right snug up against the table edge, more or less. And then he put the Covenant right next to them, and Nicaea and the Errants, when he deployed them, went between the obstruction and the table edge, which was no more than a 3-inch gap. So they're crammed. It looks like,
yeah, it's 2 models standing abreast between an obstruction and the edge of the table.
That's it. And they're all crammed into this little tube.
This is going to be an interesting battle report.
So I asked him about this deployment because it was, you know, fascinating to me. And he says that the last time he played, he deployed in the center, he moved forward and kind of spread out, and his opponent just ran everything at one flank, and so wiped out one flank before the rest of his army could deploy. And so what his concept was, that by doing it this way, he'd be able to kind of spearhead his entire army forward without any portion of it being exposed. It was an interesting theory. Interesting theory. Okay, and lastly, I placed my Rangers, and after seeing his deployment entirely jammed up on that one corner, I decided that I would deploy my Rangers on the opposite side, so on the side of the table that was empty, so they could run forward and eventually curl around to deploy his troops, hopefully on an exposed flank or, you know, coming up behind or something like that. Okay, so my first turn, I realized that I want to get snipe on the Black 13th, and they are way out of range. So that's not going to happen, and that I basically run everything up. I get Arcane Shield on the Storm Guard from the Journeywoman. I get Arcane Shield on the Lancer from Striker. Blur isn't going to help because the Errants all have blessed ranged weapons, and there's no other ranged weapons in the list, so I don't bother casting it. The Rangers run, the Storm Colors both, you know, shuffle around a bit and run, and the Black 13th run straight towards Striker, so that next turn I can get them on Snipe. Rowdy and the Lancer both run forward quite a bit. So on his turn, he orders the book to do no knockdown. The Avatar rolls for focus. It gets, you know, 2 or 3, doesn't really matter. He runs it up behind a forest. The Devout and Kreos move up a little bit. They do spell ward. And the Errants shuffle forward a little bit to the up the side of the table, but really staying behind the obstruction for the most part. And, yeah, they don't really get very far, to be honest. He was trying to keep them safe, keep them back. Kreos puts a Defender's Ward on the Errants, and Vilman and his 2 Paladins both walk up and go into a Stone and Mortar. And I had to explain to Rockwell probably 3 or 4 times that the Paladins are not a unit. He kept trying to move the 3 Paladins at the same time and then drop them all into... And I'm like, no, they're solos. You can activate them separately. You move this one, then he does whatever he wants. And he didn't quite grasp it. So I'm hoping eventually, he gets it. But it wasn't this game.
It'll take a couple games, I guess.
Yeah, but you know the concept of a solo. And again, he comes from a Warhammer background.
Poor man.
Yeah, poor guy. It's just the whole mentality shift is very different, and you can tell from his placement that it's he's thinking about you know solid blocks of units, but whatever. Okay, so Signar turn two. I upkeep both my arcane shields. The storm guard all run forward again, not all the way up into the not right up to the front lines, not as far as they can go, but they move up so they can get charges next turn. I measure with Striker. I move him up a bit, and I pop his feet so that my front line is all protected. The Rangers walk up. They take some shots at the Avatar and at the Paladins, which are all out of range. The Lancer walks up behind them. The Stormcaller on the left flank walks behind them. The other Stormcaller goes up onto a hill because I want to keep him alive long enough that he can actually get some Stormcalls off. I put Snipe on the Black 13th. I forgot about that. And so the Black 13th move up. And most importantly, Ryan fires a Mage Storm at the Errants, hoping for Lucky Scatter. And it doesn't scatter into the Errants, which is too bad, because if you look at the pictures, you can see there's a clump of about, 12. No, not 12, but I would have been able to hit 8 or 9 of them if it had scattered in the right place. But instead, it scatters onto Rovan and his Honor Guard. Oh, I forgot. He had Rovan and his Honor Guard. That's the character unit for Menoth. So the Mage Storm scatters onto them, and at dice minus 4 for damage, I need to roll 9s to kill. I kill both of the Honor Guard, and I put 4 points of damage on Rovan from one Mage Storm.
Oh my.
Yeah. And I just missed the Avatar by a fraction of a hair, which is, you know, a little bit sad. But on the other hand, I wiped out 2/3 of his character unit with my character unit.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
From, like, 18 inches away. So
yeah, I agree with that.
He's starting to learn Menoth. He's starting to learn Signar. It's good. And everything else just,
like,
you know,
shuffles. Gonorrhea.
Rowdy moves up behind the Storm Guard just in case he charges the Avatar and I can, you know, have him there for the next turn. And that's it for me. And then next, his turn again, and he decides, and kind of standard tactic, he's short away. He doesn't want to bother risking anything against my feet, so he just moves the Paladins up a little bit, drops them to Stone and Mortar again, he moves the Avatar over a little bit, doesn't do anything with him, doesn't gaze, just, you know, stands right there in front of...
That was a bad idea.
Standing in front of all of my Storm Guard. Yeah, not a good idea.
Gaze would have made it so only like 2 can charge it.
Oh no, lots would be able to charge it. Gaze means that you have to charge him.
No. It means that you have to move directly towards him.
Oh yes, yeah. That's a good point. Actually, it would have. Well, maybe 3, but either way. So he doesn't
actually. No. They have to start in his command range, though, so only like 2 of them would be that close. Yeah.
Either way, doesn't do anything. Just moves over. Keeps Defender's Ward on the Errants, and in a fascinating move. He doesn't move the Errants. They all stay clumped up, right up against the edge of the table, behind that obstruction, and out of range of everything. I think, again, he was trying to keep them safe. I would have thought, personally, that after last turn, seeing that 4-inch AoE that wiped out his character unit, you would have been a little bit more spready out with them.
Clumping is inadvisable.
Yes, but whatever. And Rovan, the last member of his character unit, moves up a little bit, and he cleanses off Arcane Shield from my Storm Guard. So that at least is something. So then my turn again, and the Storm Guard charge, and I get 4 of them on the Avatar, 3 of them are just out of range. I get 2 on Rovan and 1 just out of range. And first I move the Journey Woman. She moves up. She puts Arcane Shield on them again. No surprise. The 4 that get on the Avatar all hit. They inflict massive damage. I leave him on 6 boxes, and the only thing functioning is his right arm and his legs, and the 2 that charge Rovan kill him easily. No electro leaps, but, you know, that's okay. My Rangers move up a little bit. They open fire on the Paladins, and POW 11s against armor 21, with dice minus 10. I still manage to inflict, you know, 2 or 3 points of damage total, which
not
out of 5 shots, not bad. It's not bad. And the book is still saying no knockdown, so I can't earthquake them. I move the Lancer up a little bit in the hopes that if he doesn't charge me, I'll be able to charge him on my next turn and actually be able to hurt them because, again, armor 21 is a little bit tough for Signar to deal with.
Well, the range of the book is only like 10 inches, isn't it?
Yeah, the paladins were probably just out, but the avatar was in. And knocking down the paladins wasn't really a thing. Like, they weren't...
I think it would have been a great idea.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe.
Solos, if they're knocked down, can't do anything.
Yeah. But I would have had to hit them. Eh, maybe.
Fair enough.
Maybe. It's a 10-inch range spell. I might have been able to get it. Oh, no, I
Looking
couldn't.
Looking at the picture of this turn, I would say you definitely were in range.
I was in range. I didn't have the focus for it.
Got it.
Because I had to cast three upkeeps, maintain three upkeeps, and then I spent two focus on... Oh, instead of casting Earthquake, I cast an Arcane Blast. That was it. So I tried to kill them instead of knock them down.
Fair.
And I did a couple points of damage, but I had a really cruddy damage roll, so no such luck there. And the Rowdy moved up a little bit behind the Storm Guard. The Storm Caller shuffled around a bit. I tried to call Lightning on Nicaea. She was out of range. And that was basically... Oh, the Black 13th fired brutal shots at the Avatar. And they all hit, and they all failed to wound. So, yeah, armor 19 is pretty significant. So then, his turn again. He rolls for focus for the Avatar. He gets a full load of 4, of course. And... he doesn't bother giving any to the Devout. He upkeeps Defender's Ward. Avatar goes first, shuffles over a little bit, and smites with great force 4 of my Storm Guard. Then Nicaea moves up. She kills my Storm Caller. The Errants activate. They finally shuffle over and get into the fight a little bit. And between all their shots, they're capable of killing 4 of my Storm Guard. No, 3 of my Storm Guard, leaving me with a total of 3 left. Storm Guard passed the command check. Then the paladins activate. Both of the vanilla paladins charge my lancer. They both hit, and they inflict... The first one inflicts like 10 points of damage, and the second one inflicts 6. So they've knocked me down more or less to half health. They break my shield. But I still have Arcane Shield on, so you know I'm not taking as much damage as I should be. And then High Paladin Vilman charges in, and he misses.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The set defense is a bitch, huh?
Yeah. Well, even then, he only needed like a 4 to hit me. He's he's a mat 9.
Holy...
So 6. He needed a 6 to hit me, and he couldn't get it. He whiffed on the shot. So Lancer survives with his spear still intact, his cortex still intact, his leg still intact. Basically everything besides his shield. This whole time, Krios and his Devout have just kind of been shuffling back and forth a little bit. This turn he does the same thing. The book says no knockdowns, and that's it. So my turn. I have learned now that those paladins are powerful, and they probably should die. So I move a bunch of my rangers, who are already engaged by them anyways, into position so I can engage more of them. And it turns out that POW 7 knives can't hurt armor 16. I know, I was stunned myself. But yeah, 4 attacks with their steely knives, and I put 1 point of damage on one of the paladins and nothing on any of the other ones. I allocated 3 focus to Rowdy.
Shocker.
And, yeah, which was a big mistake. I've kept all my spells. So Rowdy... okay, so one of my Storm Guard was being engaged by the Avatar, which was too bad, and they were standing right between Rowdy and the Avatar, so I couldn't activate them first and move them out of the way, because I would take a free strike for that one guy. I suppose I could have, but I didn't want to. So I charge with the Storm Guard. They all hit the Avatar. They don't inflict any damage whatsoever. Rowdy charges in, charges for free, and his initial charge attack... just splatters the Avatar authoritatively. I think I overkilled him by 10 points of damage or something ridiculous. And so I'm left with 3 focus on Rowdy and nothing to do with it. Again,
Typical marks.
So I spend a focus for Grudge, which just sucks, but, you know, whatever. Got the focus, got to do something. Should have given the focus to the Lancer so it could actually have bought and killed things, but I think I gave the Lancer 2 instead. No. Yeah, 1 or 2. Anyways, Lancer buys a spear attack against one of the Paladins, kills it, and misses his broken shield attack, buys another spear attack, and misses it as well. Stormcaller calls on Vilman, hits, doesn't do any damage. The Black 13th move up, and I drop another Mage Storm on his happily clumped Errants.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So...
Oh, no. Baby seal clubbing.
He's got to learn. It's really the only reason he's got to learn. And he had... all 10 of his Errants in kind of like this one sausage-shaped clump. That 4-inch AoE hit 7 of them, and I vaporized 6. Just gone. Missed the Covenant, missed, you know, a couple others, but one of them survived. And,
wow.
Yeah, so on his turn, He's down to four errants, the devout, and one high paladin and Vilman, or one paladin and Vilman. The devout and Krios shuffle over a little bit again. Krios pops his feet, knocks down my three remaining storm guard, Rowdy, a couple of my rangers, and that's it. The errants shoot. I forgot to mention I killed Nicaea last turn with Lynch, whichever, the one that can ignore stealth. He pops his feet, knocks a bunch of my stuff down. But all he can do is kill three of my storm guard, the last three of my storm guard, and the paladins both swing at my lancer and miss, just straight up miss.
Just curious, was he able to hit them in cover, or did you forget about it?
Who?
His errants, were they able to hit your storm guard in cover, or did you forget about it?
Oh, because they were knocked down, they were able to hit. Yeah, because he popped his feet.
Oh, first. Feet, got it. Yeah. Didn't hear that.
Yeah. So Krios popped his feet, so all my storm guard are defense 9. His errants are mat 6, they're hitting, you know, basically on 3+, and they hit, all of them hit, all of them killed. One of them took a shot at Lynch and missed, but that was it. So the book says no knockdown, and he's basically at this point, he's down to the High Paladin, the Paladin, and and the Devout. Four errants. So my turn. If you look at the pictures, you will see he's got three of his errants standing right next to each other. Hasn't learned a lesson yet.
No, not again. Not again.
So Ryan walks over. She fires a storm, a mage storm, hits all three errants, vaporizes all three errants.
Oh, those poor guys.
These poor guys.
Did they still have Defender's Ward up?
No, he purified.
Get rid of
Arcane Shield, so it drops Defender's Ward as well. she hits, she kills. Lynch kills the last of the errants. I ignore the book, I can't do anything. And then the Lancer kills one of the paladins, and Rowdy charges Vilman in the back. With a 3 focus again, charges for free. I had to spend 1 focus to stand up. Charges for free, splatters Vilman on the first attack, and I'm left with 2 extra focus. So I buy Grudge again, because I can't allocate focus properly. Anyways, so Krios... he's now down to the Devout, the Book, and himself. The Devout is disrupted from one of my Storm Callers. Krios walks towards Rowdy, fires 2 immolations at my Heavy Warjack, which I think did a total of 3 points of damage, and that's it. So on my turn, I charge Rowdy. But I walk Rowdy towards Krios. He's out of range. I arc an Earthquake at his Warcaster, knock him down, and then my Rangers just take their standard shots, and by the last one, Krios is finished. And that's it. So, yeah. So this is one of those interesting situations.
That was a little bit of a newbie curb stomp, really.
Yes. It really was. And
so, not sure how well that really is for practicing for a tournament.
No. Okay, so let's... All right, let's talk about the ratings real quick, and then discuss the game in depth. So for feet use...
Feet use, you did the right turn. That's basically all there is with Striker's feet, right?
Yeah. And the problem is that because we weren't playing Scenario, all he did was back up. You know, as long as you have the availability to do that, you know, +5 armor is great, but if your opponent doesn't go into it, it doesn't do anything. But that's okay. It kept my entire army alive, and, you know, it basically did what the feet was supposed to do. So
yeah, just another reason why playing non-Scenario is not fun.
I agree. Really, really should play Scenario as much as possible. But, again, this was his request, and he didn't want to complicate it. I'm okay with that. So I think the feet use was probably a solid 4. No real magic there. Tactics. I took a suboptimal list, and I tabled the guy. And I...
Well, I mean, everyone's new to the game sometime. But, of course. But yeah, you know,
My only complaint...
You know, he kept kind of making the same mistakes over and over again a little bit, like with clumping and that, which is bad. But I'm not sure if that really enters into your tactics. If someone clumps their guys up and you fire a Mage Storm in them, do you deserve, like, a high five for that? Or... I don't know.
You know, my complaint about my tactics is going to sound a little bit weird, but I think my tactics were too good in the sense that I don't know how much Rockwell could have learned from this game because I wasn't really giving him opportunities to do things. You know, I probably should have been playing a more suboptimal game. I don't know if I should have handicapped myself in some way, like maybe taking fewer points or, you know.
It's tough, you know, in this game especially, you know, for a new player to play against someone who has a year of experience, you know, like, we've made the mistakes before.
Yeah.
And we still make them, but.
Yeah, of course, I mean, of course.
But we kind of, you know, we know a lot more about that game, so it's hard.
And more so than that, like, I think it's not just the fact that he's a new player. He's a new player who previously played Warhammer. And I saw you and Aaron struggle with these same things where I was running my armies out, you know, to the extreme limits of their command the first time I picked up the game because I never played Warhammer. You guys had your entire units clumped into these little tight bricks moving, you know, as masses for at least the first 5 or 6 games.
In my defense, I was running Sentinels, and so they had defensive lines. So
right.
I thought that that was the way you should do it.
Right.
Now, and that's not really right, but at least I had an excuse. Yeah. For Aaron clumping Winter Guard, there's no excuse for that.
yes, the 6-inch Thunderhead pulse that got the entire unit once, that was
so
magical.
Dirty. Yeah. Should never happen.
So I think tactically I probably only performed a round of 3 because this was not a... I hope he learned something from it, but I don't think I did a good job teaching. That's really what it boils down to.
Fair enough, yeah. I can give you that.
Scenario is not applicable because there was no scenario. I assassinated his caster. That was it. As for luck, I had better than average luck. I had a good scatter, some really good damage rolls to kill Rovin's Honor Guard.
Sure. I think your Rangers damaging any paladins gives you like a 4.
Yeah, I was totally nickel and diming them to death. It was insane. I was hitting like, you know, there were armor 21, pow 11s, so dice minus 10, and I was still inflicting a couple points of damage every turn. And then, you know, against pow 7 knives against armor 16 when they didn't have Storm and Mortar, and I was still inflicting 1 or 2 points of damage a turn, so... yeah, I think it was a solid.
Like, Ranger knives are actually designed to be useless, and you were circumventing that.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk a moment about time use. I was running a 7-minute clock as kind of a way to keep myself handicapped. Not handicapped, but to get practice for trying to get a feel for how long that is. Oh my god, is it short.
Yeah, wow. 7 minutes at 35 points is really hard.
So
I don't know how people do it. I really don't.
The only assumption I can come up to is that we're doing something wrong. Because on the one turn where I charged the Avatar, that was the first thing I did that turn. The second thing, I moved my Journeyman up, gave Arcane Shield to the Stormguard. Stormguard charged the Avatar. I got 4 charges on it, and by the time I had finished rolling my Stormguard, I was out of time. Like, that was my first thing I activated on that turn, and that took my full 7 minutes.
Yeah, I just don't know how you can do a full, like, even if you have just 2 units and the rest is jacks, I mean, I don't see how you can activate them all.
It's insane. And I'm sure that people who play a lot of tournament games, like, one of the stumbling blocks I realize I've come across is that every time you ask your opponent, okay, what's your defense, that adds, like, 15 seconds onto your turn.
Yeah.
So what's your defense? Your opponent's like, I think it's 13.
I guess that's part of it. You know, if you have to know their stats. I mean, and I mean, usually I've memorized their stats by the end of the game, but I mean, it takes some time.
I've noticed that some people paint onto their bases defense armor.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, the back arc of the base will have like 14/17.
Seems like you're only helping your opponent by doing that, though.
Yeah, but you know, it's a polite thing to do.
I guess.
So. Anyways, so there were. After that, so the turn I charged the Avatar, I ran out of time really quickly. But every other turn I managed to get within 30 seconds, so either plus minus 30 seconds of my 7-minute time zone. But at that point, after I charged the Avatar, I had the game in my hands. Like, it was no longer a threat, right? Everything that could possibly kill Rowdy was taken off the table. And so it didn't matter if I ran out of time or not. And so as a result, I was moving much quicker and more
fluid. I'm not sure, but I mean, Aaron's are still Weapon Masters.
Yeah, but their Weapon Master's going up against an Armor 22 Warjack with...
and they're like, I think they're low power Weapon Masters.
They're POW 9s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so even if he removes Arcane Shield with Purify,
which
he probably should be, he's still Armor 20. So it's dice minus 11 on charges.
He's base 20?
He's base 19 with a buckler.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, he's a serious threat. If he was a little bit faster, I would be taking him against every Retribution list I ever play. God... Losing Warjacks to Mage Hunter Strike Force is just so soul-crushing. Okay, and last, Derptitude. If I made a derp on this list, it was taking the Black 13th, because gods, was it ever ball busting to wipe out his entire unit?
No, I really think against a newbie, you probably shouldn't have played them. You should have just gone with, you know, vanilla gun mages, and just, you know, done your thing.
Yeah.
Just because, and honestly, they're in more Signar lists than B13, I think. Well, maybe I'm wrong, but anyway, and they're just kind of they're more representative of what the faction can do, I think.
I think it's probably a viable argument. I still think that the head off match between Arcane Gun Mages and Errants, for two players that almost know what they're doing, it skews very heavily in the favor of the Arcane Tempest Gun Mages. Longer threat ranges, better shots, equal chance to kill, and more guns. Yep. But against somebody who instinctively is clumping their army, yeah, the B13s are better.
That's a bad thing. Yeah. I didn't notice him doing any self sacks or anything like that. I guess, was there no opportunity for that to happen, or did he not take the UA?
You don't need the UA for the self sacrifice.
So you don't? Okay.
He could do it. It's just at no point did he consider it to be valuable.
Fair enough.
And again, the self sacrifice is really a scenario thing. It's to make sure that you have something that's contesting a zone stay in the zone. So in this case,
engaged models or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I killed six guys in one shot. He could self-sacrifice off four of those because, you know, there were four guys who were not killed. But two of them in the zone are still dying and, you know. Are
so dirty.
Them,
yeah. Well, exactly. I hope you enjoyed your baby seal clubbing.
Oh, my God. So for me, the best part about this game is just the sudden and remarkable realization of how much better we are than we used to be.
That's true, because we were doing that stuff. When we
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just
kind of eye-opening.
So for people out there listening who might be feeling a little bit, you know, hard on yourself for struggling with the game, I assure you, you are getting better.
If Mark can learn, anyone can learn.
Exactly. So if I can be beating noobs, you can be beating noobs as well. It's also very encouraging for me for the tournament, because I was watching a couple games this is the game store that the tournament's being held at, and, you know, the caliber of players aren't bad. The guy who played Nick, again, played a very solid game, no question. But at the same time, I was really worried that Nick and I would be, like, light years worse than everybody else there.
I think it's pretty clear we're middle of the road, you know what I mean? Like, we're certainly not gonna walk all over anybody, but there's gonna be some people we can stomp.
Yeah.
Which is always fun.
Yes. Yeah, it's gonna be entertaining. And the nice thing is in the tournaments, you know, I don't have to worry about bringing my curb stomping lists, that I can actually bring a Stormwall and not feel guilty about it, because that's what the tournament's for. So it's gonna be fun. I think I'm gonna be eliminated first round, but that's okay.
I think it's going to come to the timing. I'm going to get eliminated because of clock. It's going to be awful.
Yeah. My one hope for the tournament isn't that, you know, I do well or anything like that. My one hope is that I don't play you or Aaron first round. That's all I want. Just give me somebody new. If I'm going to lose to a random, I'll lose to a random. But
fair enough.
Yeah. So those are our battle reports. I hope you found them as entertaining as we found them to play. It was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to going back, hopefully next week, and, you know, the tournament's in 2 weeks, so maybe get some more practice before then.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
So, Nick, what do you got on the painting table these days?
Painting table? Well, as I have been declaring over and over again in the past couple of months, or weeks, or whatever, I am working on my Invictors. I have four of them done, plus the standard and the officer.
Mm.
So that's
a half unit. Nice.
Yeah. Not quite. Yeah, it's six guys, though, so that's something. I'm plugging away those guys, and I want to finish them off so I can stop saying that I have not painted the first unit I ever bought.
Oh, my God, what was my first Signar unit I ever bought? Stormblades. The first unit I ever bought were Stormblades, but they've been painted for a very long time. The second unit I ever bought were Trenchers, and they are also painted for a very long time. Actually, that's not true. My Trenchers are not fully painted. I need two more Trenchers to get a full unit. I only have a min unit plus two painted right now.
Hmm.
Right now on my painting table, as I rotate my head to see what I'm actually painting, my lightning pods. I want to finish those off because it'll be nice to finally finish the Stormwall. So I'm painting the lightning pods, two vassals of Menoth, an allegiance of the Fist, and a covenant are all getting pretty close to getting done, actually. And then I've got four Menoth warjacks that are pretty close to being finished, which is nice. And I finally finished Villamin in my Hierophant, and what was the other one? Villamin, Hierophant, Epic Fiora. They all got finished, and they've been base coated, and I've posted pictures of those up on the blog, so anyone who wants to check them out can do so. So I think that's all we have for this week. Join us next week when we will be playing internally again, so a bit more elaborate battle reports, no newbie stomping, and Aaron taking pictures again, because Nick's pictures are actually pretty good, I gotta say. You took good, scenic shots. Your iPhone camera is pretty solid. My pictures are awful. They're all over the place, and the color tinting is wrong, and it's kind of hard to tell what the hell's going on, and blah, 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 blah. So I missed Aaron so much. So it'll be nice to be having him back. He'll be back next week. And I think next on the docket is supposed to be a game between Aaron and Gavin. So Kator versus Circle.
All right, good stuff.
Should be a good one. So anyone want to say anything to anyone? It's just you and me. Nick, did you have anything you want to say to close the podcast?
Well, thank you for listening to Thomas Might, and if at first you don't succeed, kill all humans.